Time is 7 o'clock. You are tuned to Redwood Community Radio, KMUD Garberville 91.1 on your FM dial, KMUE Eureka 88.1 FM, KLAI Laytonville 90.3 FM, and Shelter Cove at 99.5, and we are everywhere worldwide at KMUD.org. It's time for Politically Correct Week in Review. I've got our hosts, Josh and Charlie, ready to go. Let me shoot it over to them.
Okay. Are we on there? Hey, yes.
We
care a lot.
Always. Always. Especially this past week. Boy, we've gotten a lot to care about, haven't we?
Yeah. So this is the Politically Correct Week in Review, a call-in talk show on the second and fourth Mondays of the month. And the number here is 707-923-3911. And we'll be wanting to hear your opinion on things. Man. Yeah, it was a busy week. Politically, domestic politics. I've kind of swiped everything off the radar elsewhere. Well, not quite everything, but as Bibi Netanyahu touched down in D.C. this morning, or is, yeah.
And there was no president or vice president there to greet him.
Yeah, well, the latest news, too, is that Vice President Harris will not preside over the Senate, as her duty to do, perhaps, on these occasions. When he
won't be present.
When he addresses the joint House and Senate on Wednesday, it's become sort of a. It seems like the Republicans are supporting Israel now, and the Democrats are stepping away. And it's interesting. I mean, tactically, it's probably a good idea. Huh?
Well, the party isn't stepping away, but they're
the perception. Perception. Yeah.
And that's why she's not going. And of course. Netanyahu is a Republican guest. He was invited in by the House leadership, which has a very narrow majority in the House. And, of course, the Democrats run the Senate. So the whole purpose of it is just to rub Biden's nose in how great it is to kill Palestinians. And, you know, I think it'll be eminently worth ignoring.
Yeah. Well, of course, Speaker Mike Johnson has threatened to have anyone who disrupts the event arrested. So you can watch for that. Because certainly somebody's going to be disrupting.
That's true. Yeah.
And probably unto the convention that next month, too. The protest against Palestine won't necessarily be a non-starter at that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'm planning to be in Chicago for the convention.
That's funny.
I honestly don't know what I'm going to be protesting yet. after all this time, I had all kinds of banner ideas for No Mo Joe, but
So that, you know, there was such a drumbeat. The media was I'm not sure, you know, who was creating what, but the media definitely was of the opinion. Well beyond, you know, at the end of last week saying, yes, Joe is going to have to decide. Joe is going to have to decide. We expect him to decide this weekend. And it was, you know, a fait accompli. They were stoking that opinion dramatically. And Democratic leaders, of course, were in line with that. And it's hard to say which comes first in that situation, you know, the perception that the media is creating or the serious worries that the party leadership is having.
The serious leak was that Nancy Pelosi told Biden on Friday or so that we can do this the easy way or the hard way. We've had the easy way for the last 3 weeks. The hard way starts Monday morning.
Right.
And apparently Saturday night was when he called his chief consigliere to actually write the letter. And
So now we know.
He's still alive.
Now we know that when Joe said only God Almighty will get him out of the race, that Nancy Pelosi is God Almighty.
Well, and it's curious that now that she's got what she wanted, the congressional leadership has not automatically endorsed Kamala, like all of the, nor has Obama.
Right.
It took him a while. I'm losing count. But, you know, the rank and file of people serving America, the elected officials, they've all, you know, so many of them have plunged into immediate support for Kamala as a way to steer out of chaos.
Including most of the would-be candidates that were named that would not be her. And of course now,
well, who are now the principal candidates for her vice president.
Yeah. So that's the next big shoe.
So of course they want to suck right into that.
Yeah.
But it, it seems as if there's a little bit of a split maybe between the Obama people and the Clinton people. The Clinton people are all behind the Harris. The Obamas, not so much. What that means, I don't know.
Yeah, no.
And we still don't know whether Biden's alive. Because, boy, all the conspiracy theories left and right and up and down.
Yeah, I mean, there was somebody came out and said,
opportunity for making stuff up.
Yeah, somebody came out, he's not really sick with COVID. You know, he just used that as an excuse to step down. Yeah.
Or at least an excuse not to appear in public because, you know, he's mumbling and cross-eyed.
Or just understandably just plain embarrassed. You know, that's a real sentiment as well. I mean, it's like, you know, he did his best and, well, it wasn't good enough, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that it isn't even about his best. It's about medical disability.
Yeah,
that
right.
That's just perfectly obvious. It's not even his fault for once. So much is. But the fact is that he got old and he's unfit for office.
Well, the really interesting aspect of this, given the next, you know, 4 months or so, at any point, he could say, you know what? You're right. I can't get out of bed. I'm really tired and I can't think clearly. Kamala, you're the president now, which would make a totally different kind of run for the candidacy that are be running as an incumbent all of a sudden.
Yeah. What difference would that actually make, flying Air Force One instead of Air Force Two? Some people have said the advantages of incumbency are enormous, but in the final 100 days,
well,
she's already in office. Like, she has an unlimited budget.
Yeah. I mean, things like pardoning some special people or, you know, that kind of thing, you know, ceremonial stuff that or announcements of policy that, you know, have some more teeth. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, she will have a hard time distinguishing herself from Biden, but a couple of distinguishing features might cause her trouble. She she has been a loud opponent to the horrible oil pumping scheme. You know, where
the drill baby drill crowd.
And specifically in Western Pennsylvania, you know, they've what is it called? I'm sorry,
the pipeline there. The
no, the oil pumping technique, the mining technique,
fracking,
where you destroy. Yes, fracking. Fracking has been a pretty big business in Western Pennsylvania, and she has come out foursquare against it.
Yeah,
and that's going to hurt her there. So she may have to compensate that by having the popular Pennsylvania governor Shapiro be her running mate.
Yeah, no, I mean,
and that would be great for Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania is, by all, you know, it certainly is the most populous swing state in the country. It'd be great to get that. But Shapiro is a strong Zionist, or what they a supporter of Israel is what they call him, a strong supporter. And that would cost her votes in Michigan and Minnesota, which she also has to win. They have to win everything in order to win anything.
I mean,
and it's going to be a very complex calculation.
I'd like to be clear here that we, as radio hosts on the K-Mod, we're not really supposed to talk about our voting habits. I will say I am not a registered Democrat. There's that out of the way.
I will say that I am a a registered Democrat, but I don't hold it against the November ballot.
But the thing is that I have always felt from the very beginning of my ability to vote that the role of president, well, and George Washington felt the same way, had been elevated out proportionately to what the actual task of the job of being an administrative executive. It's not supposed to be as special as we have made it in modern times. And it's a role. It's not a it's not the be-all and end-all of somebody's career necessarily. It's supposed to be a role that is fulfilled on behalf of the American people, right? And we've kind of, you know, now that we have the new immunity ruling from the Supreme Court giving the president supreme powers, even before that, you know, the perception is the president is supreme, that the president makes up what's going to happen to us all. And for things like inflation, I mean, the president doesn't cause inflation. You know, nobody really has control over inflation. It's a market force that they believe they can adjust, but remains to be seen. And
well, the king of France famously modeled whether people were fat or skinny, and in the same way the imperial president tells people what is and isn't shameful behavior.
Right.
That's one of the reasons people are so embarrassed by the Trump presidency.
Yeah.
But the bigger picture of that, I completely agree with you, but the imperial presidency is a controversial issue that only goes in one direction. Watergate was an extraordinary exception to the rule that, holy cow, Congress can still fight back the imperial president, who has all the power, all the initiative, all the microphones.
Right.
You can hold that power back for a time. And if your next president is Gerald Ford, you can, not worry about the imperial presidency for another 2.5 years.
Right, yeah.
But the drift is always towards executive centralization,
and
forever, just like corporations.
It puts me It puts me in mind of the recent court case in Florida dismissing the case was thrown out on the basis that the Justice Department appointed special prosecutor is an invalid entity. And I mean, that is the narrowest technicality for that case that you could conceive of to throw it out on, and throws everything else into question because that same prosecutor has other cases. So where does it leave that? You know, I don't think the judge in the D.C. case is going to say, oh, that's right, he's not valid, and dismiss the case.
Well, it's just case law at this point. It still has to go through the appeals process before it's struck into law. But in the meantime, she's such a good Trumpite, she'll probably be on the Supreme Court soon.
Yeah, right. So how about that Trump boy? He had his show this week. Kicked it off with a good overture by narrowly missing being shot in the head. That was dramatic.
They should do that more often. That was really attention getting.
It really was. I mean, you know, as he said himself, usually you have to be dead to have an iconic picture like this. He's got his iconic picture, fist up, blood spewing. Man, there was a lot of snide remarks about the marksmanship of that fellow, which I will not repeat on air now because that's technically criminal, I think.
And that also prompted a whole bunch of conspiracy theorizing that the whole thing was staged, etc. And one thing we can say tastefully about marksmanship is nobody cannot miss that close from 150 yards and count on it.
Right.
That's not the way to get yourself elected. That's the way to get yourself killed.
If he had an expert marksman that convinced him he could hit his ear only, that would be...
ask William Tell.
It looks like we've got a caller, so let me see what they have to say.
Welcome, you're on the air.
You got to turn your radio down.
I know this. Ask William Tell.
Are we with us?
Yes, I'm with you. So I usually make astute comments of political gravity, but all I want to say to this point is that if Trump is elected, we'll have our first president with a pierced ear. Okay, you heard it first. Bye.
I can't believe Obama wouldn't have had a pierced ear somewhere in his life. He's my age. I know when he grew up. You know, surfer dude in Hawaii. Well, come on.
He was always running for something. So he, gosh, you know, Obama moved to my neighborhood where I grew up after I left. And so I still have a lot of friends who, you know, were pumping iron with him in the gym and friends with his social circle. And really a fascinating bit of gossip that bafflingly hasn't made the press is that Obama had a well-beloved girlfriend in the neighborhood who was Asian. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they were a couple, they were a thing, and people liked them both a lot. And Obama broke up with her, saying that he had to be with a black woman for his career. And so he did. And he found a nice one.
I see.
But it makes you think, you know, if he's selecting girlfriends on that basis, what does he think about his ear? I don't know. You know, the man is a calculator.
Apparently, yeah. So the list of prospective vice president candidates, I kind of scrolled through them and, you know, I'm of the opinion that perhaps some of these Democratic governors who managed to get elected in red states probably are best left there to do the good work in their state, you know. Does that make sense? I mean, you know, it's like why?
Well, in fact, I've seen calculations very specifically on, all right, what color is the lieutenant governor who will replace?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That calculation.
And they have all this plotted. So I think Arizona is the place where the power relations would shift.
Right.
But in Pennsylvania, the lieutenant governor is a Democrat, so they're willing to let him go.
I see. Yeah, in Arizona, the Mark Kelly from Arizona who replaced McCain, I mean, that guy hits all the marks, a naval pilot, astronaut, the husband of Gabby Giffords, who was shot, you know, and started a pact with her about progressive politics. And he looks like Uncle Fester, but you know, it's that kind of guy, you know, a true American hero. He's flown in space many times, and his twin brother did too. And, you know, that's the kind of candidate you'd think they'd look for. You know what? I kind of like Pete Buttigieg in that role.
The thing to remember is that Harris is the underdog now.
Yeah, right.
She has a very narrow path to the presidency. And because she can't afford to make any mistakes,
right,
and she has to have everything break her way, I would expect that the VP pick will be based on turning a battleground state.
Yeah, right.
And that's why, well, I think Shapiro was the likeliest.
I mean, there's other strategies there. I mean, what about the fact of turning the left of Democrat and disgruntled and youth? You know, wouldn't somebody like Buttigieg do that? You know,
no, I think the youth can see through him perfectly well. It's just old farts like us who think, oh, he's so gay, it's so nice.
Well, I mean, when you see him speak, though, I mean, he's an intelligent, thoughtful guy who makes some good points. You know, it's like,
yeah, but he hasn't done anything in office. You know, he was the Secretary of Transportation that didn't go to any wrecks and didn't say anything about plane crashes and took a 6-month paternity leave while East Palestine was smoldering, and he never even went to the office.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I think that man is ready for a right proper grilling if they're silly enough to appoint him. But I don't think she will.
Yeah,
I think she'll look for someone popular. She's not popular herself,
right,
so she'll want somebody who has general popularity, somebody who's gregarious.
Well, it's probably going to have to be somebody with a national recognition because it's like the syndrome of Democrats picking somebody who seems qualified, but nobody knows who they are, and they're not telegenic, and they, you know, it's like, on paper he's a good guy, but do we know who he is? You know?
Yeah. No, they don't have a developed bench. That's one of the reasons why I now, even as events evolve, I still think the Democrats are hosed for November. Mm. I think people seem to be more optimistic now about Kamala. It's given them a breath of hope, but boy, oh boy, it's a very narrow path to victory. And she is not, you know, an excellent performer. Never has been. So,
although, you know, the J.D. Vance, vice president, GOP vice president pick there, he came out and said something kind of odd. He said, you know, I was in the Marines and I started a business and all this stuff. And, you know, where was she? She hasn't done anything. And I thought, well, wait a minute. She's been elected to, you know, as an attorney general, as a district attorney, as a senator, as a vice president.
Well, elected, but anyway, yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, she's had a career doing things, and he's made some rather dismissive, blatantly sexist and dismissive statements that, they've doubled down on this guy, and I don't think they're getting any votes because of him. I mean, the people that like him already are in, you know, it's... except for the money people. I forgot. Oh, yeah. Oops.
Well, it's a hard call because he's changed his colors so thoroughly since he came to national attention with his book, Hillbilly Elegy, that was really kind of a liberal screed knocking deplorables. Mm-hmm. You know, I know deplorables better than you. I grew up with them. Boy, do they suck.
Right, right.
And now... he's coming off as a deplorable, a fellow deplorable in the middle of the Rust Bucket, Ohio.
Right.
He's saying that we're the solution to the Rust Belt problems.
Right.
And, you know, you can't call him a stranger. And he says some good stuff. You know, what really strikes me about Vance, and I don't think this is going to be meaningful come next January, but he supports Joe Biden's antitrust activities that are really very important. I do too. I think it's great. It's startling that Trump appointed this Lina Khan, whom we've mentioned before, as head of the Federal Trade Commission, and she is attacking the great monopolists of America. It's shocking, and I assume that she'll be out on a piney the first 5 minutes Trump is in office. But Vance is really advancing a genuine populist agenda that I don't think Trump has ever given any real thought to. He just steals applause lines from whoever he hears succeeding. Remember, he talked like Bernie 80% of the time in the 2016 election. He was a leftist populist.
Right.
But they really are working hard on the working class white vote, which they've already got a lock on. They've got a clear majority of them, and Vance builds on that. And, you know, and I think strategically, since they thought they were having a walk to beat Joe Biden, they were just, you know, building the election totals across the country in every jurisdiction. Now, they're complaining so much. Have you seen all this? The Republicans are apoplectic that Biden has cheated them of their campaign strategies. They've made all of these commercials to attack Biden, and
whoops,
now they have to throw them all out. They want their money back.
Well, I did hear today that Kamala Harris has, there's been record donations in the last 24 hours, something like excess of $80 million came in for her campaign.
Yep. There is hope.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess J.D. Vance is potentially more dangerous to consider as the future of what's going beyond Trump. You know, have you heard they've renamed the Project 2025? It's now Agenda 47. It has nothing to do with Trump. It's just about the 47th president.
They're doing everything they can to make it sound inevitable.
Yeah.
And Trump is doing everything he can to suggest that he's never heard of them and will never read it.
Yeah.
So, you know, politics as usual.
Yeah.
But I don't think just because they've renamed it or haven't named it that Trump is going to enact all 900 pages of it as soon as he gets into office.
No, I think more likely is that his guy is going to tell him who to hire and that those people are going to tell him, hey, I've got this great idea that comes right out of that playbook.
Yeah.
And he's going to say, oh, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I think they can work him that way more than many because he's not paying attention to that kind of detail. That's why you have other people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why Joe Biden had his crew of insiders who protected him from, you know, ugly news like poll results. So, yeah, Trump surely won't be any different. He doesn't like to be annoyed by facts either, even less than Biden.
Yeah. Facts, pesky facts. Yeah, it was the stories from the Trump White House that he didn't really pay attention to the briefings, wasn't interested. You know, the briefings that are telling the president what they need to do to maintain the whatever the thing is that they have to maintain, right?
But let's remember, you know, both parties instruct the president according to their blind ideologies. Biden always considered himself a foreign policy president. He thinks that's his strong point. That's his specialty. And his foreign policy has been, in addition to criminal and, you know, murderous and all that, just tragically unsuccessful. It's been horribly unproductive for the American empire, horribly so, because he's driven China and Russia into closer agreement. He's scaring other countries away from using our smart system technology for money transfers. That's all based on billions and billions and billions of dollars piled in every central bank of every nation in the world to foster free exchange, free commerce, all that. And he's piffling it all away because he wanted to destroy Ukraine. I mean, it's extraordinary how poorly he's done. And of course, since we never think about anything, we don't talk about this. But my point is, just because you're the president doesn't mean you're getting good advice.
Right.
Not at all.
Oh, yeah, right. Hey, we've got a caller. Speaking of advice, let's get some advice from a caller.
Welcome, caller.
Hello. I guess, you know, sometimes I wonder, you know, what politics really means, because behind it all seems like it's really the economic and financial system that is driving a current event. And so I wanted to give a, let's see, here's a quote by, one of the Rothschilds. And the Rothschilds are one of eight families that essentially control like the vast percentage of banking interests and corporate interests throughout the world. He says this is Mayor Ansel Rothschild once said, "I care not who controls a nation's political affairs so long as I control her currency." And kind of following that, you know, reading history about the creation of the Federal Reserve, most people think the Federal Reserve is some kind of government institution, but it is not. It's a private bank. And I think, you know, these international bankers, and I mean, it's made up of different bankers, but essentially they do control the ability to influence you know, basically what interest rates are and whether we're going into a recession or not by the
and they make up money
so,
out of thin air. Yes, that's
so
a big power.
There's been a struggle with the banking basically financial interests, which, you know, are global, that are influencing our policies. And I guess that's the main point I wanted to make, is like, yeah, maybe it doesn't really matter. I mean, it does matter who's in office, but it seems like, you know, they kind of do this divide and conquer Democrat versus Republican game, and that's not the way to get out of the predicament that we're in.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, the Federal Reserve was created specifically to control the money supply, because there had been a series of panics that were deemed unmeet to business and progress.
They said basically point strong evidence saying Lincoln was assassinated because of his basically vow to go against whatever it was called, like the basically the Federal Reserve Act. That's not correct, but basically it was going against this international banking syndicate. But I'll leave it at that with that one. I wanted to make one more comment, something of a more local kind of, or as far as California goes, on this next ballot. I heard some, you know, basically ex-prisoners talking about how, you know, we, in a lot of states, slavery has not 100% been eliminated. There's an exemption for basically prisoners being used as slave labor. I mean, they're paid like, you know, less than a dollar an hour for work, and they're basically, so there is a ballot initiative on this election. So for all those people who are disgusted by what's going on and don't want to go vote, which is, you know, how I feel kind of, there is a reason to go in there and vote on this one measure, and that's to stop this practice of basically, you know, using prisoners as slave labor to support industry and stuff, support the state essentially. So please make that, try to publicize that a little bit more.
Yeah, that's the last legal servitude allowed. Yeah.
Yeah, and
I'll get off the air, but thank you guys for the show.
Yeah, do you think it takes a constitutional constitutional amendment to change that? Is that the
No, it takes common decency.
Well,
they aren't under an obligation to, you know.
Yeah, you're allowed to, but California. If that's still on the books in California, we would.
Well, and you know, across the South. In fact, the state of Texas had a scandal about exploiting using prisoners as slave labor to enrich private rice growers on a grand scale in 1910. And as a result of the scandal, the state itself bought more than 150,000 acres of rice country. And now the state itself exploits its
and that's allowed.
Prisoners like slaves. And I can't remember whether they get paid 60 cents an hour, or I think Texas is one of the states that doesn't have to pay them anything. They don't. And the prisoners still have to pay for their own food and their cigarettes at the commissary and so on.
Right.
So they're exploited full time for no money, and they have to pay for necessities while they're in prison.
They're paying their debt.
Yes. And there are other states treat them better. But it would take an act of Texas to stop doing that.
Right. Hey, we got another call. Hello, caller.
Oh, yes. Hi. Yes. I'd like to know what you guys think about the intelligence of having, say, a town hall, several town hall meetings with four or five Democratic candidates, expressing their thoughts on what needs to be done to forestall what seems like the inevitable cataclysm. You know, just I'd like to see that myself. I'd like to know what you guys think about that. Is a smart way of proceeding, and also I'd like to think about an open convention like they had with Jack Kennedy, who didn't get it right away. I think he got it on the third go around. I think the advantage of that would certainly stimulate the national audience and the world. So I hear there are certain hurdles, legal hurdles about not being on ballots, but I don't know anything about it. So if you guys could talk about that, I'd appreciate it. And I love your show. Thank you.
Right. Yeah.
There's
the timeline is ticking away. You know, back when LBJ said he wouldn't run, it was March earlier in the process, and they had time to maneuver, for better or worse, as it turns out.
the presidential election should start in July. Come on.
Yeah, no, I mean, other countries have snap elections where they say, okay, ready, set, go, and a month later they have an election. It's not impossible. And in fact, it's been determined by some. I mean, I heard a comment that the perceived chaos in the Democratic Party right now, the, you know, will they, won't they, with this person, that person, what do we do, how do we do it, is sort of the sign of a healthy party, as opposed to the lockstep behind fearless leader GOP, which has no conflict or dissension within its ranks. Yeah, certainly after the convention, it's a different deal. But before the convention, really anything should go. But two, the vice president
not what the Democrats did, of course. They shut down the whole primary process. They made sure that
Obama
ran out the candidates that might run down Biden's victory as the sole remaining candidate in South Carolina, which hasn't voted for a Democratic president in 50 years anyway. Who cares what they do?
Well, of course, that's true. So
from the beginning, it ain't Democratic anyway. And to say it should be Democratic now is, you know, that's cute. I loved the idea when I first heard it 3 weeks ago of having an open conversation with people who are no longer afraid of offending Joe Biden and saying, yeah, I want to be president and here's why, and having a public discussion. It wouldn't be a legit process, really, but it'd be informative and it'd be interesting to people who care.
Right.
But it would lead into the convention. And we have to note that the way the convention is set up right now, Joe Biden already has a lock on the nomination,
right,
you know, because of the phony primary process, et cetera. And Harris stands to inherit those votes. Now, there's going to be, remember this, the Democrats said there was going to be a Zoom roll call of delegates right in early August, weeks before the convention, because Ohio had this fluky law that they had to, you know, make their decision before a state deadline. Well, then Ohio said, hey, don't do this for us. And they changed their law. And the Democrats said, yeah, well, we're going to do it anyway, because they were all about guaranteeing Joe Biden's resumption of the throne without any conflict or discussion. Now, that's up in the air. They don't really know what's going to happen, but they still have that roll call scheduled for, I think, the 7th of August, a week and a half before the convention begins. And the result of that roll call will be that Kamala is the nominee. And that means the best we can hope for in an open convention is some interesting discussion about who should be your vice president, although I think it's quite likely she's going to name someone before then. So my point is that the institutional walls have closed in around inevitabilities from the beginning, and
Kamala
has inherited the inevitability.
Yeah, so, well, and
I would like to see that show, but I don't think we will.
In my mind, that seems reasonable, as she is already in succession to be the president. If the president can't do his job, and the president has said he can't do his job as candidate, so there you have
it. On the inside track, she should be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the thing that the reason the Democrats were first talking about this, some Democrats, about having you know, town hall meetings to discuss alternatives, is precisely because Kamala's the alternative, and they know that she's not popular either. she's not a good politician.
I just wonder,
she's not effective.
I mean, in terms,
that's why they want to do something different. But they probably can't figure out how.
Well, yeah, I mean, they believe that in terms of their Democratic Party line. I mean, that's the thing that always irks me. It's like, well, yes, that's true. She's not electable because the Democratic Party has deemed her a risk. But these are the same operatives that you're talking about that are anointing the inevitable. I don't know that they're in touch with the populace of the country. Let's put it that way.
Well, I think the difficulty in having this conversation is that Kamala does have a base of support, and criticizing her, saying a bad word about her, is racist, according to, you know, blocks of the party that are really important,
right,
and that the progressive bloc as much as the Black Caucus. And you know, how do you navigate around that? Well, you have this phony public process where everybody gets an equal say, and you try to do something different. But I think the reason she's criticized is, you say it's because the Democrats don't take her seriously or respect her. But I don't see that she's earned much respect. And you know, I don't care. You know, I wasn't going to vote for any of them anyway.
Right.
But she's an easily made fun of figure.
Leaning into her being the first woman president might be a tactic that, I mean, you know, basically we're talking a very narrow population that are going to make a difference. And who those people are, you know, it's anybody's guess, really. But I mean, they pull it all the time to see who the important people are. And it's like, okay, suburban women, you know, what do they think? Well, if there's a choice between a woman who has prosecuted people for domestic violence, you know, versus a domestic violenter, you know, it's what's the choice,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think we got another call.
Yeah. Hello, caller.
Hi. Good evening. Good afternoon. Welcome. Good morning. So, as someone has mentioned, it's sure been a whirlwind week, and things can change on a dime, can't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Just a couple questions and a comment. The first question is, do you think the Republicans are seriously squirming?
I don't.
Yeah.
I think they're upset,
yeah.
But I think they also recognize the inevitability. So I kind of figured that a lot of this is just stagey stuff because they didn't think it was very likely that Biden would last until November either.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't.
And they came out of the convention feeling pretty pumped. I mean, just because everything, the way things come down, you know, everybody heard the right thing and felt good about what's going on. To the point of putting bandages on their ears.
No, and you know, they instinctively criticize everything the Democrats do, and this is their criticism of the day.
Well,
I'm wrong, but and I know that they really did spend a lot of money putting together Biden attack ads because it's so easy to do.
Mm.
But they can spend less money putting together Kamala attack ads, and that'll work too.
Yeah.
Well, this was another question. Do you think what are the goods that can be gotten on Kamala? You know, the dirt, because there was so much that they.
They make up stuff. I mean, it's very easy to make up stuff. They say she's.
Yeah, they don't have to.
They slept her way to the top. You know, that's a casual throwaway line that is used, which, I mean, really doesn't have a lot of teeth. I think.
I don't know if they've got much traction there because, you know, it was known that she and Willie Brown were an item.
Right.
But he was divorced. She was not
right, married. Yeah. He wasn't, in fact, but who cares?
He wasn't?
Kamala Harris and Willie Brown were not an item, okay? Jesus.
They were not.
What kind of Republican are you? Willie says it all the time. Yeah. Why would he lie about it? And why wouldn't she correct him if he was lying?
Yeah. It was just a dalliance, let's put it that way.
He said they were dating.
Right.
Yeah, he dated a lot of women. He was famous for it.
Well, if you have the chance, and maybe you've already read this or seen this, I can't remember who it was who interviewed her. But I heard something yesterday that Heather Cox Richardson had been out on a canoe trip all day, and she was sunburned, and she didn't think that she was going to have to be on for an interview, but she was. And what she had to say I think was pretty interesting. She thinks that that what the Democrats did was a masterful stroke.
She would.
She has often interesting things to say. Yes.
Well, yeah, I thought it was interesting. I don't know how much of it was real or would happen, but what her what she said was, look who MAGA has. I mean, they have Trump and J.D. Vance, and they're stuck with them. They've got an old felon and a younger guy who is all for men. He's a misogynist. And he's against women, and he is a racist, and there must be a lot of women out there who may not like to continually and continuously, who don't like being told what they ought to do, who they ought to do it for, when, and especially, you know, concerning their bodies all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Kamala's biggest strength, I think, that she has been a strong, continuous advocate for abortion rights.
Right.
And we don't know how many women will tell one thing to pollsters when their husband's in the room and pull a different lever in November. We don't know. We never do know. We saw them, you know, appear where the polls didn't show them existing in 2022. It may happen again. No, that it's a very good point.
Yeah.
But it's not about Kamala's particular qualifications. It's issues based, and that's a hugely important issue.
The other thing that the Republicans have thrown at her and coined a new term they referred to as the immigration czar, her failure to fix the border because she was assigned by the president to do so, and you know did a lot of traveling to South America and Central America, and you know just handed an incredibly difficult task and tried to do something that didn't make a lot of popular traction. And really, you know, the entity involved with policing the border, the real czar would be the Homeland Department, Homeland's what you call, you know,
security.
Homeland Security.
Mayorkas is the guy that's failing there, I guess.
Well, we have to put this in context. I'm a city kid. I know that cities are made out of immigrants and people who cities are a place of opportunity where you go to get it and get out, to move to the suburbs where decent people live. But the cities are built out of people grabbing opportunity and people taking advantage of these people until they get their feet on the ground. Mm-hmm. It's not the whole city economy, but it's an essential part of it. And that's why whenever the Democrats talk about immigration reform, they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. Because cities don't want to cut off so-called illegal immigrants. They want undocumented aliens because they don't have rights and they work for less. Mm. And
Charlie,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Have you written a book yet?
I did, but it wasn't a very good one.
Well, hey, I think you got one going right there. And I wanted to make a comment. I think that right in the beginning, the wrong telephone number was given. I think I called the office, and I called the one that was given. So maybe you might put it out again, and someone else might call in, and I'm going to get off and give someone else a chance.
Okay.
But I read Hillbilly Elegy when it came out in Garberville, in fact, and I'm not living in Garberville. I think it was 8 years ago. And don't bother. I mean, if you feel like it, have a few spare minutes, go ahead. But listen to Trey Crowder, the liberal redneck, and what he has to say.
Yeah, no, I saw that Trey Crowder, the liberal redneck stand-up comedian, came up, you know, in popularity the same time that J.D. Vance did, the same time Trump was. And apparently J.D. Vance came to see his act and introduced himself, and they started hanging out, drinking beer together. And the way he put it was, we talked about one thing only. We talked about how terrible, corrupt, asinine, et cetera, Donald Trump was, you know, while swilling beer.
He was very critical of Trump in the early years.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So anyway, I think the last caller was from the East Coast. I bet Charlie could identify his accent. Not Austin. But anyway, you guys are great, and your engineer is great, and it's fun listening to you and hearing you.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Well, thanks for your call.
Yeah, that's 707-923-3911, and we have another caller. Hello, caller.
Welcome. You're on.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Hey.
Good evening.
Hey. Yeah, I wanted a couple of thoughts about Kamala. You know, first of all, I think it was really interesting that President Biden assigned her what I understood and what has been repeated today on the news, that she would go to the Central American countries, Mexico, and find out what were the root issues that was causing the immigration.
Right.
And I'm wondering if she ever came back with any kind of an honest report on
that. Yeah, right. No, that's why we didn't hear about it. She came back and told the truth and nobody wanted to know.
Yeah, we know the reasons why, and they don't look good.
I think it's going to be beat to death of that she was the the czar and she's responsible. They're going to just beat her up really bad on that one. And I'm wondering if in the course of that, somehow there might be a disclosure. I mean, was she required to write a formal report? One would think so.
Yeah, you'd think, although it is a special office.
She's in a ceremonial role. She doesn't. Her only fixed duty is to show up in the House or Senate when the vote is tied, and the president can tell her to do anything. And if he tells her to go fly around Central America and see what you find out, you know, she's done her job.
Yeah. Speaking of presiding over the Senate, though, apparently she's like broke the record for breaking ties because the House, the Senate's so close. Yeah. So she spent a lot of time doing that.
Sure. It's the only way the Democrats could get anything passed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it'll probably be a different balance.
Yeah. Hey, we've got another call. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
Whoop. I guess we lost it.
It was a little choppy there on the connection, too.
Okay, well.
Oh, all right. I can see I got one bar right now.
I see.
Oh, there we go. All right.
One last comment.
That's the point. Yeah. Yes, the other comment is about how she became Biden's vice presidential pick. If you go back to the origin of what caused him to make that decision, I believe it was a sop or a gimme to the audience he was speaking to, which I believe was Black Americans in a state that he wanted to win. And he said, I believe spontaneously, and I'm going to appoint a Black woman to be vice president.
Right.
And when he did that, he put himself in a terrible box. You know, at least terrible from my point of view. And so this is the way we end up with Kamala Harris as the potential next president of the United States, a woman who has a very controversial record in California in the position she served, and somebody who just happened to get the job because she was a Black woman who happened to fit the bill that the candidate was trying to influence votes from a particular ethnic audience.
Did that playing the demographic work? I mean, maybe that's why he won. So you could call it shrewd, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, they are the biggest Democratic base.
Yeah.
Black people. Black women are the ones who disproportionately vote in the Black community. So, it was almost an inevitable move because Biden couldn't have won any primaries without kind of quasi-machine and religious Black votes in South Carolina. That was how everything was keyed around. So that's what he did.
So that's politics. You bring up an interesting point. Did he gain an advantage, or can we assume that he gained an advantage from that statement? Because it was really unfortunate that he did that, and you know, he's stuck with Kamala ever since. I think Biden could have won with other situations, but it was a close race. So anyway, gentlemen, always a good show. Appreciate it, and I'll listen in next time.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Thanks for your call.
Take care.
Another caller on heels. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, you're on. Welcome.
Hey, well, I'm glad to see the Democratic Party has decided to go with the younger generation, with a Generation X candidate, and that's away from my generation.
Yeah.
My whole life, I've heard, you know, folks from the conventional wisdom caucus, usually white men, talk about what a bad idea it is to have an African-American candidate on a ticket for a major political party for the presidency or vice presidency. But, African-Americans are 3 for 3. On that count, you know, they're doing really well. When there's an African-American on the ticket, the Democrats win the election. Okay, so I think people are severely underestimating Kamala Harris's chances, considering what a fool Donald Trump made of himself.
Yeah,
you know, last Thursday night with his hour and a half long speech, where he's rambling on about how much he loves Hannibal Lecter. Okay,
and now who's the old candidate?
There's one 80-year-old senile candidate in the race now, and his name is Donald Trump.
Right.
Yeah, he's obviously got his own cognitive issues. One down, one to go.
Yeah, right. Well, okay, yeah. So imagine that. J.D. Vance takes over.
Yeah. Well, you're going, speaking of J.D. Vance, I mean, I think that, you know, that pick seemed like probably a good idea, like, he, you know, maybe match up well in a debate with Kamala Harris. Well, he's not going to have that chance now.
Right.
So he's probably going to end up, you know, debating somebody like, oh, North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, right, perhaps. And I think Cooper would trounce Vance in a debate. I think that might be a good pick.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yep.
Hey, thank you for the show.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for your call. And another one.
Yep.
Let's get her on.
Okay.
Welcome. You're on the air.
All right, guys. Hey, I tell you what. Now, let's do a little math here real quick. All right. So, you know, President Trump, he immigrated his grandparents, I think, from Austria or something like that, just when he was, you know, faking the presidency. But think back to all the immigrants that have come here, every kind of colored person you could think of. Now, think of the African-Americans that are here right now. Think how long their history goes back here.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Now, these are some Americans, man.
And these
solid
were not,
Americans.
And not, not willing immigrants, necessarily, right?
Not willing, but they built half of our state houses.
Right.
I mean, these people are Americans more than a lot of white people even understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They might have come in, like, 1820.
Right.
How about 1620?
How about 1620, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, do the math, right, people.
Yeah.
We're all Americans here. It's called the United States of America. So get with the program, people, and close your eyes and listen to what comes out of their mouth.
Yeah,
that's
no.
That's what you're dealing with.
It's true.
Love you guys, man. Peace.
Thank you.
Hey,
yeah.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, the designation of a black candidate, I mean, it's un-American, really, to characterize people that way. I mean, we've inherited that, and we stay with it, and it's in the media. But to say somebody is a black candidate, it just perpetuates the racism we've all been – I mean, the institutional racism that people deny that exists, you know. You know, the notion that we could have, say, Cory Booker as a vice president, you know, no, that we can have two black people running, that would be too much, you know.
Well, that'd be even worse than two women running.
Yeah, right.
People
right.
have suggested Whitmer of Michigan would make a great vice presidential yeah. candidate, Kamala. Two women on one ticket.
Oh, no.
Oh, equal opportunity.
Yeah, and who would have thought that Mexico would have a woman for president before we do? The state of macho, you know.
And Jewish, too.
Yeah, yeah. To boot. Yeah, so I was just thinking that, you know, there were presidential candidates 4 years ago in the Democratic Party. You'd think that those would be, I mean, you know, vetted and run, and to think that would be the first stable you'd look at. But that's just not the way it works.
Well, they're failed candidates.
I mean, well, yeah.
The media set up Pete Buttigieg, for example.
Well, Biden was a failed candidate until he won, you know.
Well, yeah. The media chooses candidates that they find exciting, and then they're trotted before voters, and voters give them the big yawn. And when they don't get 3% of the vote in the primary, they're failed candidates. Mm. I think that's fair.
Okay. Well, we're at the top of the hour
and
here.
Kamala is one of them. I'm sorry. I should throw that in. Remember, she pulled on the eve of the California election.
So wait,
she knew she wouldn't get 5% in her home state.
Okay, how about Liz Cheney for vice president? I mean, maybe this is the time when a combo party, a combination comes in, and we call ourselves fair and balanced, so to speak.
But then we'd have Liz Cheney as vice president.
Yeah, I know. A heartbeat away from the presidency. That's scary. Okay, thanks, everybody. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Thanks, Jordan, for engineering. And I'll be probably posting some things on the Politically Correct Week in Review Facebook page shortly.
Thanks, guys. George is up next with Cool Green Shores.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks, everybody. See you next week or 2 weeks or 3 or 4.